Hello, and welcome to the Villains and Monsters podcast, where true crime meets thrilling fiction and dark minds come together to talk about all things sinister and psychotic. I'm Cassie Sharp, suspense and thriller author, and your host. Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Villains and Monsters. Today we're going to continue reading Where the Shadow Lies. Last episode, we did the first couple chapters, and today we'll do the second couple chapters. I will say, if you're still here, then you are bearing with me on learning this whole narration thing, and I do appreciate it. It's getting better. I hope you'll see that in this episode. I was thinking about how to do this with, if you are reading a regular audiobook, you would stop it somewhere and then continue when you're ready and it doesn't like catch you up. But I was thinking when I read books, I often, if I take a little break in between a couple days, I will often go back and read like the last page just to kind of catch myself up. And it made me think of when I was a kid, one thing that my dad always did was read to me every night since I was a baby. He read The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings series over and over and over and over again until I was probably middle school. So it's awesome. But he always caught me up. So he would pull out the book, go to where we were, and he would say, "Hey, you remember this is going on and this is going on." And then he would continue to read, because he's read that series and everything J.R.R. Tolkien so many times, he knew what was coming and like what to focus on to catch me up. So I'm going to try it this episode. I'll kind of catch you up on where we are before I start the narration. If that's not something that you guys like, if you have a great memory, mine is sucks fucking ass. But if you have a great memory and it's not something you want to do, shoot me an email at villainsandmonsters@gmail.com. That's villainsandmonsters@gmail.com. Okay, so just to catch up, we did chapters 1 and 2 yesterday. Chapter 1 introduced JL. You kind of saw a little bit about her erratic everyday life. And then she had her, as we like to call it, inciting incident, where she found the note and she freaked the fuck out. That's basically it. Jason was the second chapter, and you got to meet him. He has a fun way of thinking, doesn't he? I have a very big fondness for Jason. He's probably my favorite character in this book, just because he has a warped sense of humor and he's cynical as fuck. So he reminds me of me. So anyway, he kind of went over his side of the story, what had happened that day. He had the study session at Professor Higgins' office. Then he met with Emily to help her study. They had an incident at his house. He was an asshole. And then he found the note and he started to think that maybe it's all connected. Maybe the assholes at school are playing a prank on him. And he has decided that he will figure that shit out. So that's the catch up. JL and Jason, mom and son. So you get to meet Xander next. And I'm kind of excited about that because Xander's cool too. So again, if you have any questions or comments or concerns, or you just want to tell me that I suck ass, that's totally cool. You can email all that shit to villainsandmonsters@gmail.com. villainsandmonsters@gmail.com. Chapter 3. Jason had already chugged 2 Red Bulls and still couldn't shake off the exhaustion that made his body sluggish and slumped. His mind was wading waist-deep through dense mud, too worn to make forward progress, yet too stubborn to lie down and let the earth take it. It was still dark outside as he drove Mom's car to Abel's body shop. She'd still been asleep on his couch when he'd left the house this morning. Hopefully, he'd return before she woke, wondering where her son and car were. He'd missed practice last night, an absolutely unacceptable thing to do in the opinion of his head coach. Jason understood the man's ire. Their team was highly ranked this season, and Jason was a starting lineman. Though he acknowledged the necessity to participate in every practice, Jason didn't really give a shit. Even now, he could barely grasp what had caused that reaction in Mom. What it all meant. But he knew he had to be there for her in that moment. Football be damned. Through a string of angry texts last night, Coach had decided his punishment. 3 extra hours in the gym this morning for conditioning. That shit wasn't going to happen until he fixed his mom's tire and made sure she was in the sane state of mind. Jason gripped the steering wheel. Confusion gusted and swirled in his memory. Objective thought was caught in its erratic grasp, making the clarity of truth unreachable. What does it mean? He was the first person in the parking lot, as usual. Abel wasn't exactly a punctual person, which irritated Jason to no end. He turned off the engine, closed his eyes, and slumped in his seat. As the raspy sounds of From Ashes to New reverberated through the speakers, the events of the previous day played through his mind. It had been fucked from the beginning. Higgins' group yesterday morning, Emily's visit in the afternoon. Jason's eyes popped open. His heart raced as a realization took root. If it was all connected, all the events of the day, he balled his fist. Someone was going to pay. Mom's face flashed in his memory then. She'd been terrified. When he'd left for practice, he was running late. He'd run out to his Jeep and saw a note stuck to his windshield. No big surprise there. Mom was known to leave them. It was her way of letting him know she didn't want to invade his privacy, but she was thinking about him. She tried not to show it, but it had to be hard to go from being mom, cook, alarm clock, chauffeur, organizer, calendar keeper, teacher, nurse, cheerleader, and ass kicker, to having nobody to care for every single day. It's like when prisoners come up for parole after doing 20 years and have no idea how to function alone in the world outside their steel bars and stone walls. They're conditioned and comfortable in the routine. There may be days when they just want an escape from prison life, but in the end, they can't imagine doing anything else. Jason often wondered how much Mom longed for her bars made of meal planning, her walls of patched denim. He had never asked for privacy or given her a reason to feel the need to keep her distance. So, when he'd peeled the note off his windshield, he threw it in the front seat and loaded his bag into the back. He'd planned to read it after practice and send her a text that he loved her, too. Just as he was getting ready to hop in, he'd heard her car. He'd figured she'd forgotten to write something down on the note she left him. He should have known something was wrong the moment he'd laid eyes on her. She'd looked disheveled, worried, her hair a black hive of frustration. When he'd leaned in to kiss her, he smelled smoke. She'd stopped smoking years before. When she'd asked about the tire kit, he was caught off guard. He'd barely remembered borrowing it months before. He felt like an asshole that he'd never returned it, that he'd been the reason for her haggard appearance. She'd gotten a flat and was stuck on the side of the road in 95-degree weather. When he'd heard that first scream, the world had stopped turning, as though its rotation was somehow synced to the beat of his heart. He'd been digging in his trunk for her kit when it began. He rushed to her. The note she'd left was crumpled in her hand. Her eyes were closed, and she was repeating, "No," in a strangled, maniacal cry. Tears had begun to stream down her face in long, unhurried drops. When her whole body began to shake, Jason had latched onto her. No matter how many times he'd asked her what was wrong, it wasn't getting through. He'd held her there, trying to comfort her, attempting to gauge what the fuck was going on for at least 10 minutes. When she'd finally noticed him, their eyes met. The icy horror in hers gutted him. In all his life, she'd never looked at him that way. She'd been a child in that moment, terrified of the dark and the monsters within. He'd had no words to speak, no air to breathe, no idea how to help this person whom he loved so much. The sound that had come next was more chilling than her screams. It had started soft, a tiny, melodic giggle that he'd barely heard. It had shocked him to stillness. Her head was down, eyes piercing the paper in her hand as her laughter grew louder. It had crescendoed into a demented cackle when he'd begun to shake and cry himself. At that moment, he'd had no doubt the terror in her eyes he'd witnessed just a few moments prior was then mirrored in his own. He'd managed to carry her into the house and lay her gently on the couch before he'd snatched the note out of her hand. "You gonna sit there all damn day or what?" Abel's raspy voice startled Jason. He exited the vehicle and tossed Abel the keys. "Needs a new tire, and I'll be buying a jack and iron too. Just throw them in the trunk when you're done." Abel glared at Jason. "I got shit to do, boy. You know where all the tools are. Go on ahead and get it done yourself." Jason took a long, calming breath. Abel wasn't always the easiest guy to handle, but over the years, Jason had gotten lots of practice. "Sorry, old man. I know you're busy, but it was a rough night. Can't promise I wouldn't break something." Abel humphed. His tools were his livelihood. "Damn college kids, you're lucky I like you." Abel handed the keys back to Jason. "Pull her into Bay One." While Abel got to work, Jason sat on the bench outside the shop, willing his hands to stop shaking. He itched to pick the peeling paint off the old wooden seat, then sand and repaint, something he'd fantasized doing to this entire place over the years, its walls caked with carbon and filth, its siding cracked and rotted. The mess made him feel disoriented, fidgety. He hated feeling out of control, couldn't stand the fucking chaos. It made the anxiety debilitating. He took in a huge, large gulp of air before digging in his pocket. His fingertips grazed the object that held the power to change everything. He pulled the note out and set it on the wooden bench beside him, face down so he couldn't see the words. The words that had broken the strong, sturdy woman who had held him up for 19 years. His mind hadn't caught up with his emotions, so he didn't know how he felt about it all yet. He eyed the crinkled paper. He didn't need to turn it over. It was engraved in his mind. "Dear Jason, I've written this letter in 10 different ways, and still I have trouble finding the words. I can't answer every question you're going to have right now. All I can say is I needed to tell you that I'm proud of you. I saw your game last week. Impressive. More than a father could ever ask of his child. I will see you soon, son, and we will discuss everything. Love, Dad." Dad, as in father, as in the man who had been dead for nearly 20 years. Jason knew about his father's death, supposedly just months before he'd been born at a young age. Mom, she'd always been vague about it. Any mention of him had resulted in a sort of gloomy detachment on her part. She'd get quiet, and then he'd regret asking questions. The recognition of that mood switch in her caused him to imagine the reason for it. He deduced she was sad because she missed Dad, that she must have loved him very much. Those assumptions led to more fantasies. By the time he was 6, he knew what his father had looked like, sounded like, and laughed like. He had been a big bear of a man, yet fit. He'd had a nice, comforting smile, full of big pearly whites. He could have used his strong fist for protection with great ease, but preferred to have his hands free to hold his mom, the love of his life. And when he found out he was going to be a daddy, tears of joy had lingered on his cheeks for hours. Now Jason had no damn clue what to think. That mental image he'd burned in his brain at a young age of a man who adored his mother did not match the reaction Mom had had when she'd read that letter. Terror did not equate to love. He had little doubt that his father was, in fact, alive because her reaction had been too genuine. He did not, however, believe it to be a coincidence that the day he first talked about his father to anyone was the same day the man supposedly reached out to him for the first time in his life. Someone was fucking with him, and he intended to find out who it was on Monday when he returned to school. Abel announced the car was ready when a thought hit him. Could it have been Emily? She left the house not long before Mom showed up. Technically, she had the opportunity to leave the note, but would she? What would be her motive? Certainly, it would be entertaining to witness the emotional breakdown of someone as stone cold as he. He thought about her friends. Many of them were on his team. He'd like to say he shared some sort of sacred bond with his teammates, but outside of practice and games, he never spent time with any of them. For all he knew, they wanted to see what would happen if the crazy linemen were to become angry or aggravated. And it was strange that Emily had asked him to help her study after Higgins' study session. The study session in which his father's death was revealed. What about the project she wanted to work with me on? A project which would give her access to his psyche and the opportunity to find weakness and vulnerability. He couldn't think of any reason she'd be interested in trying to understand him other than the possibility that she had an ulterior motive. It could have all been some sick prank. Brownie points my ass. But the worst part, it didn't hit him until Abel hollered for him from inside the shop again. Mom had been lying to him his entire life. "Did you include the jack and iron?" he asked Abel while handing over his debit card. Abel blinked several times, his jaw slack. "What the hell you need another one for? There's already tons of them in the trunk." "What?" Jason tipped his head to the side, strode to the car, and popped the trunk. A glance inside stole his breath. He backed away. 1, 2, 3 steps. There were, indeed, multiple jacks and irons stored there. Jason counted them. 11 of each. Chapter 4. "You don't want to do that, kid. Put it down. It's not too late." "Fuck you. Listen." Bang, bang. Knock, knock, knock. Xander sat up, startled, his back drenched, his exposed skin fused to the leather couch. "You in there, boss?" He swallowed barbed air, its journey down his throat sticking, peeling away layers of parched flesh. He swung his heavy head to the clock. Just past 7 a.m., he'd spent the night in his office, again. Balancing his weight on sweaty palms, Xander tried to stand upright, but the room tilted and swayed. Beams of light shone through the blinds, nauseating him each time one stung his dry eyes. "I hear you in there. You all right, man?"
"Yeah, coming."
The deep gruff of his voice made his temples throb in protest. He managed to make the 10 feet to his office door without falling. After turning the knob, he stumbled back to the couch. Whatever had his friend knocking this early on a Saturday could be received lying down. Michael Fleming took a seat on the matching chair across from Xander. He flopped his ass down, arms crossed, giving Xander a hard stare. It would be business then.
"You get my text last night?"
Xander asked, the memory of sending it the last fuzzy picture before the blackness had taken over, before the devil's juice had stupefied him into slumber, a state which Xander longed to get back to. This conversation needed to end quickly. He had a hangover to nurse. Mike barked out his deep, boisterous laugh. At the best of times, it was infectious, but right now it made Xander's ear pop and groan with the intrusion.
"Yeah, I got him, boss. You must have sent them after a few swigs of that bourbon."
Mike pointed to the half-empty bottle perched on the desk. Xander's stomach rolled.
"Did you do it?"
Xander managed to sit upright, the room's spin slowing to a tolerable speed. Mike tilted his head, hesitating, never a good sign.
"Did you close the case, Mike?"
Irritation rumbled with acid in his stomach.
"Did she call you?"
Mike smirked, ignoring Xander's question completely.
Who? What are you talking about, man? I told you to call Freeman and close it up. The woman is fine. Now, what the hell are you doing here? It's Saturday and early. Mike raised a brow as if to say, you're here early on a Saturday too, you dick. Well, it was his office. If he wanted to stay after hours, get tipsy, and pass out on his couch, he had the right to do so. It wouldn't be the first time, and his buddy knew that. There was nobody waiting at home for Xander. Hadn't been in a long time. Mike had a family and never worked on the weekend. His presence this morning was unusual, giving Xander a bad feeling to go right along with feeling bad. Mike cleared his throat. I talked to Freeman this morning. He said it's not enough, wants to know more. What the hell else is there? Xander ran his hands through his sweaty hair. He knew they lived in the area, knew what her name had been changed to. We've given him everything he's asked for. My thoughts too, man. Told him as much. Said he wants to know more about the kid, what he's doing with his life, whether he needs anything. Mike shrugged. Shouldn't be too hard, right? That's not the point, Mike. Every time we've given him what he's asked for, he wants more. That shit don't sit right with me. When's it gonna end? He has enough info to do what he intended to do, and that's the only reason we took this case in the first place, remember? Mike smiled. This got anything to do with, what was it? Beauty meets chaos? Xander's brow creased, causing the ache in his head to intensify. What the hell was Mike talking about? He needed a shower and some more sleep. Needed to go home. Just tell him we're done. Mike sat up in his chair, leaning forward, elbows on his knees. It's his grandkid. He just wants to know how the boy's getting along before he dies, you know? I know Freeman is persistent as all get out, but let's just give him this peace of mind before we close the case. Xander clenched his fists. If Freeman was worried about his grandchild, he shouldn't have waited this many years to check on him. The regrets of a dying man were not Xander's business, nor did he want them to be. But arguing with Mike when he had his mindset was about as useless as a trapdoor in a canoe. Do what you think is right. I'm going home. Xander stood, feeling his pockets for his wallet and keys. I thought you'd want to handle the rest yourself, Mike said. And why the hell would he think that? You've already talked to the woman. You can get closer than I can, and we both know you want to. He said the last with a sneaky grin. Their encounter yesterday had been interesting, to say the least. He hadn't exactly walked away from the situation having established any sort of connection. Mike's suggestion that Xander wanted to further explore their non-existent bond made no sense. To avoid any more questions, to save his temples from further probing, Xander simply nodded and snatched his keys off the desk. Time to go home. He followed Mike out of the building in silence. When Xander had the door to his truck opened, Michael called out, "See you Monday, boss. Have fun." "Have fun." Mike peeled out of the parking lot before Xander even turned over the ignition in his truck. He reached in his back pocket to fish out his phone so it could charge on the drive home. He had 2 missed calls, 1 voicemail, and 3 texts. He checked the messages first, all from Mike. When he scrolled back through the conversation they'd had the night before, Xander closed his eyes, his head shaking in disbelief. He should never drink and text. Shit's dangerous. Yesterday, text. Me, 10:51 p.m. Mike? Mike, 10:55 p.m. Xander? Me, 10:59 p.m. She's so strange, but good. Close the Freeman case. I don't know if she got my card. Hope so, man. Beauty meets chaos. Tell him it's done. Mike, 11:01 p.m. What? Did you meet her? How did you manage that? Me, 11:04 p.m. I am the magician. I'll learn telepathy? Mike, 11:05 p.m. What the fuck are you talking about? Me, 11:11 p.m. Close the case first thing in the morning. I just telepathied that into your brain. Do it. Mike, 11:13 p.m. Telepathied isn't a word. Me, 11:17 p.m. Fuck you is a word. Mike, 11:18 p.m. Fuck you is 2 words. Me, 11:21 p.m. I used telepathy to make her call me. Mike, 11:26 p.m. Who? Me, 11:30 p.m. Chaos. Mike, 11:34 p.m. Go back to bed, boss. The wife is waiting for me in my night. Today, Mike, 6:03 a.m. So you really want me to call Freeman this morning? Mike, 6:18 a.m. I guess I'll call him then. Mike, 6:40 a.m. Where are you? I just went by your house. Xander cringed. He shouldn't have given JL his card, shouldn't have created a chance for further interaction. Beauty meets chaos? The hell does that even mean? Meeting JL the day before had been an odd encounter. She wasn't exactly a people person. The image of her, standing by her car when he'd pulled up, hands on hips, hair flying six ways to Sunday, scowling at the world and everybody in it, flashed in his mind. In truth, that had been kind of cute. Nobody likes to be stranded on the side of the road, especially in that heat, but she took stress to a whole nother level. He'd seen many a southern woman fly off the handle, each time resembling some sort of natural disaster. JL, though, she charmed him from the get-go. How can anger be charming? He didn't know, only it was on her, kind of. Anyway, none of that mattered. He was a professional. He had been hired to do a job, and he intended to do it quickly so they'd finally be done with Mr. Freeman. He shouldn't feel this way. Freeman was an old man trying to make peace with his mistakes before he died. But the guy was becoming obsessive, and Xander wasn't comfortable with any further invasion of privacy. He hadn't divulged her address or place of work to Mr. Freeman, or given him any way to contact JL himself. After her nervous behavior yesterday, he didn't figure she wanted to be found by her father or anyone else. Xander respected that, respected the shit out of it. He checked his missed calls next, one from Gran, the other from a number he didn't know. He hit play on the voicemail as he navigated the road home. Hey, kiddo, just checking on ya. Miss you. Come see me and I'll make you meatloaf and potato salad. Love ya. No more messages. He shrugged the unknown number off. They would call back if it was important. As he drove, he tried to figure out a way to meet JL's son. What was his name? Jake? Jackson? Jason. Yeah, Jason. How the hell was he going to pull that off? From what he could tell, the kid went to the university in the city. That was out. He couldn't pass for a college student on his best day. Xander let out a loud breath. This shit was too much for his throbbing head to handle right now. First, sleep. He could plan later. The stale stench of old smoke and the sterile reek of liquor were the first thing Xander noticed in the dimness of the lounge. The smells made him gag. I'm never drinking again. A bar was the last place he wanted to be at this moment, but it hadn't been his choice. Xander had managed to get a couple hours of sleep this afternoon before his phone woke him up, the same number flashing across his screen that he'd missed earlier. He'd not expected the voice on the other end of the call. Once his eyes adjusted to the light, Xander looked around. The lounge was more sleazy dance club than bar, a place full of shady drug deals and shameless hookups. Women flaunted about with too much makeup and not enough dignity. They ranged from barely legal to desperate cougar and every age in between, their morals more meager than the scant pieces of fabric they wore, which left nothing to the imagination. The men were worse, though. Frat boys out to score Oxy and Adderall. Then there were the men in their 30s and 40s who'd likely left their wives at home with the children so they could find a strange woman to have meaningless sex with. The worst were the old dogs. They prowled for vulnerable women to manipulate, and there were plenty of them here. Xander shook his head. This place had transformed over the years. It used to be one of his and Gran's favorite places to go, but that had been when it was called Mama's Kitchen, when they'd serve comfort food with a smile, not possibly laced cocktails with a scowl. He tried to circle the room, but it was difficult to move through the throng of people gathered in drunken clusters of laughter, bickering, and dancing. By the time he made it to the mahogany bar lining the entire back wall of the main room, he'd been felt up and propositioned enough times to make his patience dangerously thin. He squeezed through two couples blocking his way and waved on the bartender.
The woman serving drinks sauntered up to him from behind the bar. She gawked at him, her eyes traveling from his face to his torso and back again. She leaned over onto the bar, propping her chin in her hand and squeezing her large breasts together, giving the room an open invitation to see straight to the promised land. She reached out to touch him, but Xander jerked back. "No, ma'am, I'm good." "What'll it be, honey?" She had the type of voice that was so deep and gravelly she'd either been yelling too much or she'd smoked 2 packs a day for 30 years. "Nothing to drink." She raised an insinuating eyebrow before he could finish with, "I'm looking for a woman in her 30s, about 5'5", long, curly dark hair. You seen anyone like that tonight?" "Hey," the voice came from behind, followed by a tap on the shoulder. Xander turned, lips pressing into a white line. The crowd had cleared behind him, the source of the unwanted touch clear. Carl Kempsey. Xander's lip curled. The son of a bitch had not aged well. "Well, if it ain't Xander Williams. Haven't seen you here in years, boy." Carl clutched his hands in front of him. "Hey, Carl. Yeah, it's been a while. Can't say I've missed the place." It probably wasn't a good idea to poke the bear, but he couldn't help himself. Carl owned this dive and had a warped sense of pride for the cesspool he created after destroying the restaurant his grandfather had built. Carl sneered. "What you doing here, kid? You ain't starting no trouble, is you?" Xander took an exaggerated glance around. "I think I'm the least of your worries. When are you going to clean this place up?" Carl narrowed his eyes. "You offering to do that for me?" "I wouldn't be opposed to taking over security for a couple months, give you time to start building a new reputation." He'd do it, too, if for no other reason than to piss off the drug dealers and lowlives, and he'd charge Carl double. "Put me out of business, you mean?" Xander shrugged. "It may slow down for a while before more respectable folk discover this place, but I bet you sleep better at night." "Ha!" Carl slapped a hand on Xander's shoulder. Xander stared at it, barely restraining himself from breaking all those manicured, slimy fingers. "I sleep just fine, my good sheets next to my happy wife. Now, what business you got here?" Carl croaked. The hyena was done chatting. Good. So was Xander. He took a step back, shaking off Carl's touch, aware that the bartender was still leaning over the bar. He chose to brush against her rather than be touched by Carl. "I'm meeting a client." Xander gave him the same description of JL he'd given the bartender. Carl smiled. It was vile, mischievous. Xander's stomach dropped. He'd hoped she'd gone unnoticed. "Yep, she's here in the next room. I got Kenny keeping an eye on her. She don't exactly fit in, if you know what I mean." The notion that Kenny was a reliable protector was a laughable one. Kenny was Carl's full-time bouncer, and Xander was pretty sure he had a hand in the drug trade here. "You can tell Kenny to leave her alone now. I'm here, and we're leaving soon anyway." God willing, he could convince JL to do so. This was not a good place to be when the party started to kick in. "You can tell him yourself. Think he likes what he sees." With a chuckle, Carl turned and disappeared into the crowd. "Don't worry about him, baby, or that girl," was whispered in his ear with hot breath. Xander flinched. He jerked to the side, bumping into a stool. The bartender laughed and licked her lips before taking a shot glass off the bar and downing it in one gulp. She winked and ambled away, greeting her next victim. Xander rolled his shoulders and eyed the bottles of liquor on the wall. He might need a damn drink after all. The room to the left of the bar was what had once been the smoking section of Mama's kitchen. The air was cooler in here, and there were only a few tables occupied by reasonably calm patrons. Xander took a deep breath, his ears practically sighing in relief from the deep bass and high squeals of the main room. He spotted JL right away on the other side of the room. Carl had been right about her not fitting in. She sat in the last booth on the far bench, giving her a complete view of the room. She was slouched in the seat, attempting to look invisible, but her eyes saw everything. There was a half-empty glass of wine in front of her that she seemed to be sipping slowly. She wore a billowy blue shirt and black slacks, a lady amongst a den of serpents. When their eyes met, she sat up straight, fidgeting with her top. She'd have to wait. He had other business to attend to first. Kenny sat by himself at a table in the middle of the room. He wasn't as close to JL as Xander had anticipated, but he was within reaching distance, and he was staring at her. It was such an intense, chilling stare that he didn't seem to hear Xander's approach. The chair squeaked across the floor as he took the seat opposite Kenny. The bouncer turned to Xander with a glare, making it clear why so many people were intimidated by him. He was a large man, easily 6'5", with a mean, sunken face and a perpetually vulgar attitude. What most people didn't know was Kenny had a dark past, and they both knew Xander could make trouble for him if he wanted to. Fuck you want, Williams. So he was going to play it that way. Even in this hungover state, he stood at least a chance one-on-one with Kenny, but he didn't want it to come to that. That lady you're staring at, she's off limits to you and everyone else in here, you get me? Kenny's eyes turned cold. She your woman? Xander leaned back and crossed his arms. No, but I meant what I said. You can leave now. She's here to see me. Kenny grinned. It was unsettling in its menace. Don't ever give me orders. I'll go because I have shit to do. She ain't yours and she comes in here again without you? She's free game. You get me? It took every ounce of self-control Xander had not to throat punch the asshole. Free game? Free fucking game? As if women are nothing but a bunch of animals roaming around waiting for a man to mount and own them. He hated that very mentality that had somehow become instilled in men over the years, had a mind to beat the ignorance out of Kenny and all his like-minded brethren. He caught a glimpse of JL out of the corner of his eye. She didn't deserve to be wrapped up in a scuffle between the two men, especially in this place. If Kenny were to beat the shit out of him, she wouldn't have anyone here to protect her. He hated himself for nodding and muttering a forced, yeah. When Kenny cleared the room, Xander made his way to JL. She was staring at him with wide, wondering eyes. She looked different than he remembered. Her posture was calm and collected, her face a mask of polite indifference. Those eyes, though, they told the story she had probably spent years training her facial muscles to conceal. Her eyes were observance and emotion floating in a deep pool of honeyed caramel. He'd never seen that shade before, and it mesmerized him. How many men had fallen prey to them over the years? Please sit down. It was a soft command. She gestured to the booth opposite her. He complied willingly, but continued his silence, giving her the opportunity to say what she needed to. The last thing he wanted to do was scare her, and he also had to be cautious. He still had no idea why she wanted to meet, and had to try his hardest not to fuck it up by revealing too much truth. When she'd called this afternoon, he'd been half asleep. She'd introduced herself as the woman whose tire you changed on the side of the road yesterday. Had he heard that years ago in his younger, cocky years, he'd have replied with, "You're going to have to narrow that one down for me more than that, sweetheart." But he was practically an old geezer now, too tired to play games, too jaded to lure women with bullshit. He'd been so shocked she'd actually called, he hadn't thought to ask for her name. If he slipped now and used it, she'd know he was a lying bastard. For some reason, the thought bothered him. She sat up, posture perfect, her elbows resting on the table, her hands clasped together atop the weathered wooden surface. He glanced down at her dainty hands. They were inherently feminine, slender, smooth, clean. The first finger and thumb on her right hand were moving, rubbing. "Thank you for meeting with me, Mr. Williams." She snatched her hands back and placed them in her lap. "You're welcome, and please call me Xander." "Introduce yourself." "As I said over the phone, I need to discuss some things with you." Actually, she'd said she had a business proposition. He'd had to ask twice for her to repeat herself. What business could she possibly have with him? A crash followed by a scream from the adjoining room interrupted his thoughts. JL jumped in her seat. Her eyes darted to the source. They needed to hurry and get this conversation over with and get the hell out of here. "What can I help you with?" Xander asked, his voice low, soothing. She was silent for a moment as she measured him up. "I'm interested in hiring you to follow my son."
Hell if this didn't keep getting crazier.
"Why?" JL cleared her throat and glanced around the room. She leaned in close, her head ducked, her words hushed. "I have suspicions that he's being followed by someone, and I need to figure out whether that's the case and what I need to do about it." Someone was following Jason? Had Mike decided to take matters into his own hands and been carelessly made?
"That's not really what I do. I'm sorry." He could not get involved any further.
Could not. "I read your card, Xander. It says private investigator. What else does an investigator do?" Could not.
"I don't make a habit of babysitting. How old is your son? Does he even know you're doing this?"
Her eyes narrowed. "I'm not asking you to babysit anyone. He's 19 and no, he can't know.
"If you're afraid for his safety, don't you think he needs to know that?" Xander was stalling now.
He didn't know whether it was the slimy atmosphere or the way her glossed lips pouted that had him feeling off kilter. Whatever it was, his pulse was pounding from it. She glared.
"Look, Mr. Williams, I'm asking you to follow him and report any suspicious activity to me. I'm not spying on his personal life. I'm looking out for him. I have money. That's not a problem."
"I'm sorry. I told you I just don't do that."
It wasn't technically a lie. Xander and Mike shared their business, and Xander typically had nothing to do with the private investigation half. He was in charge of security, and this whole mess of deceit was why he'd chosen his field. Keeping track of lies, working undercover, those were things he'd left behind ages ago.
"Fine, I'll figure this shit out on my own. Thank you for meeting with me, sir, and sorry for wasting your time."
He couldn't tell which emotion was stronger in her eyes, anger or desperation. He hated seeing either option in them. Felt bad for putting them there, but he couldn't get involved. It would be wrong. He should have gone at that moment. Should have stood up and left the room and been done with the whole thing. It was too much, trying to lie to her and wanting to help her at the same time. But for some reason, he couldn't stand the notion that she thought she was a waste of anyone's time. He wanted to know what was going on, wanted to know everything. Why call him, a stranger? Why did she believe Jason was in danger? He ached to know the answers to those mysteries, but another question burned brighter within him. "What happened?" She crossed her arms.
"What do you mean?"
He watched her fingers knead against each other. "Yesterday, you couldn't run fast enough to get away from me. Then one day later, you called me up and asked to meet with me. And let me just say, ma'am, the place you picked to discuss this business of yours has got me thinking, what the hell, you know? Now you sit here in front of me asking a stranger for help." He met her eyes. "Something went down after you got back on the road last night that's got you spooked all to hell. So what happened?" He hadn't meant to say all that. He was caught off guard, though, and the shit was out now, so there was nothing to do about it. "And would you please give me your name so I can stop calling you ma'am?" Her eyes darted around the room. "Nothing happened. I've been thinking of doing this for a few days now, and when I picked up your card yesterday, I just thought, wow, that's a nice coincidence. And so I called you, but you're right. I don't know you. So just forget the whole damn thing. Figure it out on my own." She still hadn't given him her name. That was frustrating. And he could tell she was lying about nothing happening, but he decided not to call her out on it. That would prolong the conversation, and they really did need to leave. It was getting later by the minute. "I can give you the number of someone who might be able to help you. His card's out in my truck. Why don't we go get it? Together." Her eyes widened for a mere second before she recovered her impassivity.
"You should go. I'm going to finish my drink. My son is waiting for me to come see him soon. He'll expect me to be there soon. So anyway, you go. Thank you for your time, and yeah, it was nice meeting you." She shrunk against the far corner of the bench. He'd spooked her somehow, a again. It sickened him to leave her here, but she seemed to need the space. Before standing, he opened his wallet and dropped a couple bills on the table. It was a pleasure meeting you, ma'am. You be careful, okay? JL had no response. He tipped an imaginary hat to her and forced himself to walk away, giving Kenny a scathing glare on his way out the door. 20 minutes later, JL walked out of the lounge. Shadows filled the parking lot. Xander leaned toward his windshield to get a better view. She was alone, thankfully. Her head was down, but her eyes faced forward as she strode to her car. When she got there, she began looking in all her windows. Again, it's a ritual. She was doing it the exact same way he'd watched her do it at the gas station yesterday, a half hour before her tire had blown while he'd followed her. He didn't start his truck until she pulled out of the lot. Motherfucking meatloaf, y'all. Motherfucking meatloaf. I thought about going over that and re-recording, but I just couldn't because it's fucking awesome. So anyway, I hope you thought that my narration was a little bit better today. I am forever trying to improve. So I just wanted to take a second to get a little bit serious. I joke around a lot and I use a lot of profanity and I try to laugh as much as possible, but I just wanted to say that I do realize we're in the middle of an insane time, a global crisis. I watch the news all day long, which is not good for my mental health, but it also curbs the anxiety a little bit. And people are suffering and people are dying and people are losing loved ones and people are separated from the people they love right now. I had meant to start saying what actual date I'm recording. So today is April 3rd as I record this. And right now the situation in New York is dire. And it's terrible. And my heart goes out to anybody who's listening, or the entire state of New York. But it's not just New York, it's everywhere. We know that. New Orleans is getting hit. Detroit is getting hit. Chicago, Seattle, LA. And I mean, it's just spreading more every single day. Florida is getting hit hard right now too. And this is writing books, reading books. This is my escape. This is how I can turn off the news and try to find the good in my creativity and try to find the good in the world. So I hope that as you're listening to this, you don't think that I'm not aware of what's going on in the world and that my personality is not dismissing this terrible tragedy that we're all facing right now. It's awful. And I'm here for you. If you need somebody to vent to, if you need somebody to talk to, we may have never met in person before, but, just shoot me an email and I'll respond as much as I can. And, you know, I will be praying for you. And, I just wanted to let you guys know that I'm here. Whatever I can do for you, just let me know. Okay. So I did have one question last week. And the question, revolved around chapter one, when JL at the end, when JL had her freak out, the question was she hallucinating? Or was it metaphorical, like with the ink running up her arm? So as you will see, as we continue on in this book, JL has a sensitive state of mind. You'll learn why later, but you know, with the counting and the rubbing, I was expecting a question about that, but nobody did ask yet. It's a little bit different just on the counting and rubbing part. When she counts and she rubs her fingers together, it's a lot easier to see that written than it is when I narrate it. It probably sounds like she's thinking it, but she's actually, you know, touching her fingers together. It's like her tick. So anyway, you'll learn why later, but yes, JL is sensitive in her mental health, and that was her mind kind of breaking a little bit. So call it hallucinating, call it metaphorical, call it whatever you want to. It all just means that that was a traumatic event for her, and she doesn't have the capacity right now to handle that very well. Okay, so anyway, I will see you guys on the next episode, and we will continue on with our read. Let me know if you guys like the whole catching you up thing. If you don't, then let me know. If you do, let me know either way, so I can structure this in a way that is most enjoyable for you guys. Y'all have a fantastic day. Try to get out, and I hope where you are, it's sunny. It is here in Kentucky. It's nice and sunny. So get out and enjoy some fresh air if you can, and have a fabulous fucking weekend. Bye, y'all.